back to the Art Scene Podcast. I'm Louis Vargas. Before I begin, I just wanted to mention that for the last month, Whitney Lin, who was on episode 14, has been doing an artist residency at the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco. It closes soon on July 2nd, but there's an artist reception on June 30th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. in the Kimball Education Gallery within the museum. So if you're in the area and need a cool thing to do, check it out. All right, so this week's guest is Martin Strickland. I first met Martin in grad school, but he was a year ahead of me. I really got to know him while we were both interning at the YBCA, where he now works in the exhibit production department. Well, I recently invited him to come onto the podcast to not only catch up, but to also learn more about his background and his journey to working in exhibit production at the YBCA. So now here's our conversation. How's it going, man?
Going really well. It's nice to have you back here.
You know, I haven't been behind the scenes here since I think I've interned here a couple years ago.
Oh, you just come for openings?
Yeah, I just come for openings, which is still weird because having, I think it was here for almost 2.5 years interning. Uh-huh. So like in that capacity, I was always being able to roam around in the back.
Totally.
So it's so weird when I go to openings here at the YBCA that I have to go through the front door and not through the loading dock.
And everything is closed in the back. You know, you can't right. go back to the spaces that used to roam freely.
Right. And I don't know the security guards anymore. So that, like, they know me and they, like, won't bother me when I go to the back.
You could probably still use your badge if you have it to get back in the back spaces. You'd be like, look, I'm like, you know, I'm YBCA for life.
You know, and I still have my old badge. But I think it's outdated, I think, compared to what you guys have now.
Do you remember if it's the old logo?
Yeah, it's the...
It's like the green logo?
Yeah, the green and cursive YBCA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah. Now it's like the like small arrow black black one since the rebrand.
Yeah, absolutely. So how are things going for you, man? Because I think the last time when I was here, you were just like an assistant or associate registrar or something like that, right?
I was an assistant registrar, yeah. So since then, I have changed positions just a little bit, and I'm a exhibition associate registration and production. It's a ridiculously long title. It was funny, we had some preps in today that were building some exhibition furniture for the Tony Bergara show that's going to open up in June. And one of them comes in and was like, you know, I still don't know exactly what you guys do. And it was just sort of explaining, like, we're the people that, like, bug people for answers and give people deadlines and tell them, like, you can use this money, you can't use that money. I still do registration work for the upstairs shows. But what I've sort of transitioned into doing is working with the director of visual arts here who... His name is Lucia San Ramon, and we are doing a series of exhibitions upstairs called the City Initiative.
Yeah.
With various like architects, artists, designers who are sort of like reimagining or sort of like reinventing the ways that cities are used. So it's a way for visual arts to connect with civic engagement. In this like sort of more forward-facing, civically-minded attitude that YBCA has been taking on recently.
Nice. Look, sounds like you're moving on up, because I think when I started intern here, you were still an intern.
Yeah, totally.
But before we get into all the various positions that you've had here,
yeah,
I wanted to get into a little bit of to talk about where you're from. Because I think all I know is that you're from Alabama.
That's true. I am from Alabama. I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. Most of my family is from there. And for those of you who don't know, Montgomery is the capital of Alabama. It's a like moderately sized city. And it's been a like really interesting place to reflect on, like more like the older I get and sort of the farther away I get from it, like sort of just like how different like California is from, you know, Alabama. Like I always think of like the population of California still like blows me away, like 38, 39 million people, and I come from a state of like 4 million people. It's just really crazy.
Yeah.
But I went to college at the University of Alabama. And I majored in advertising and art history. And then after college, I moved to New Orleans and was in New Orleans for about 3.5, 4 years before I moved here for graduate school at SFAI.
So when, you know, before you went to the University of Alabama, were you kind of like, you know, you majored in advertising. Was that something you initially wanted to do going into grad school, and then like the art part came later, or were you always kind of interested in art?
Well, I took this, the Montgomery Museum of Art offered this AP art history course where it was this really amazing experience, and I think I was in 11th grade, and you like had to write like an essay to get chosen for it. It was maybe a class of 12 people from different schools, and you started like earlier than normal classes, so it was this like whole responsibility thing. But I really fell in love with art history. I was a huge history nerd anyway.
Yeah.
Much better at like sort of like the humanities than I was with like the math and sciences.
Yeah.
And I wound up taking the the AP national exam and like scored a 5 on that. So I got like all this credit in college, like going in, like I never had to take like the art history 101 or 102 courses.
Right.
I was like, oh, I really want to major in art history. And my father was like, what are you doing? You're not going to major in art history.
I was going to ask you if it was something were your parents ever interested in art, or was this something on your own that you,
yeah. Well, my father's side of the family is like super pragmatic, like lawyer. My grandmother like worked for the Ways and Means Committee of Alabama for like 50 years. His father was like a newspaper reporter, but my mom's side of the family, my grandfather, who died before I was born, owned an advertising company, and both of her parents were artists. So I grew up like going, my grandmother had this like fabulous studio, and like I didn't know it growing up, but the more I sort of look and see art, they were like super influenced by like cubism, abstraction, and like a lot of the surrealist paintings. I imagine that my grandfather picked that up a lot when he was serving in World War II.
Wow.
So a lot of like the paintings in my parents' house reflected that, and I just like, because my parents had so much of my grandparents' art or their friends' art, like it was always this strange thing to me to go over to people's houses who like didn't have like random oil paintings like hanging on the wall. You know, I was just assumed that everyone had that. So I like certainly became interested in art, mainly just from being around my grandmother so much and like her painting and her always sort of like, She's a beautiful painter and a terrible sculptor, but she was always trying to do it. but it was that certainly, like, I think influenced a lot of my desire to take that art history course and then sort of follow through and major with that in college.
And did you double major in advertising and art history?
I did. So I had like a few other AP credits from like English and history.
Yeah.
And I was, so I finished the, I had sort of like placated my father and I was like, all right, I'll do a minor in art history and a major in advertising. And I wound up like finishing in 3 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I cannot graduate college right now. Like,
right.
This is crazy. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I like went and talked to a really amazing professor there named Dr. Mindy Mancaro, and in the art history department at the University of Alabama. And, you know, she sort of looked around at my transcripts and was like, look, if you take like 400 level classes or whatever they were there and a really accelerated year of French, you could have a double major. So I like somehow convinced my father like, let me stay in college for another year, and that's how I wound up with a double major.
Accelerated French.
Yes. Well, you had to take 4 units of French, so I decided this, like, so I took, like, French 101 and 102 over the summer, and then, like, 201 and 202, like, I guess in my senior year, it was, like, I, like, you know, wound up coming away with it just enough to, like, read a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But never, like, speak it. My accent is like horrendous.
Well, so then you went to New Orleans after undergrad. Was that just something where you wanted to just go to a different city
I had like no idea what I wanted to do. I had like very little work experience, and my best friend in college had gotten a scholarship to Loyola Law School down there. So right after graduation, I was like, let's go down there. I had family down there and had had some other roommates in college who lived in New Orleans. So I had been going down there a good amount post-Katrina. Yeah. But I was like, let's go down there and like really check it out, see if you like the school. And I just sort of started applying to jobs like kind of on the way down there. I mean, this was like before the iPhone. So I think we like pulled over to like get coffee or something. I was like on Craigslist, like just like randomly applying to jobs.
Yeah.
And then she got down there and really fell in love with the school. And I got a few job interviews and was like, yeah, New Orleans, let's do it.
Wow. So I have family. My dad's from New Orleans. He grew up in New Orleans.
Okay.
And my grandparents, they live in, I think it's the 7th Ward. Yeah, that's the ward next to UNO.
So
they lost their house in the hurricane.
Okay.
But they live in Mississippi now. They had some other house or something. But yeah, New Orleans is an interesting city. Like I used to go there a lot when I was a kid in summers. We would take summer trips and go stay with grandma and grandpa. That was like our thing. But I just went back recently as like an actual normal who can afford to pay for stuff adult.
Yeah.
Like a couple years ago for Thanksgiving, I took my fiance. We went and go stay with my grandparents, but we stayed a little bit in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing, it's a fun city. It
was a really incredible place to live, like post-college, not really knowing what you wanted to do. And I was there like the 2 years, it was 2 years after Katrina. So there was like the population really wasn't back. It really was this sort of incredible time where a lot of people my age from all over the United States were moving there to do a lot of like, you know, Teach for America jobs, a lot of like nonprofit jobs.
Yeah.
And really just to sort of like champion the city and just sort of be there in it. It was, you know, New Orleans is sort of like the Wild Wild West. There's no rules or there weren't any. It's more, you know, it's a bit more stringent now. But it was this incredible mix of like all different kinds of people that I certainly had not been exposed to in a place like Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah.
And I just like totally fell in love with it from like everything from like the Prospect One Biennial opened whenever I lived there. And then like the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I was living there. So I just like sort of fell in love with like all different aspects of the city.
Yeah, for sure. So what kind of work were you doing that then led you to, like, want to go back to school?
So you know, I graduated college when the economy crashed. And, you know, being a fresh-faced, like, art history major, I was like, I would love to work in a museum. Well, that was, like, clearly not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think at that point, you know, before Katrina, I think the New Orleans Museum of Art had maybe like 80 to 90 full-time employees by the time I sort of like started investigating around there. They maybe had like 35 or 40.
Yeah.
So I wound up applying and getting a job for a public health nonprofit called the No AIDS Task Force.
Oh, wow.
And what I did was I ran a program that was funded through the CDC, where I used like a base model to create like sort of safe spaces and conversations for young gay and bisexual men, because at that time New Orleans had over a 3% positivity rate in new HIV infections, and Only for a short time, and anything over 3%, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly, was considered an epidemic. So what I wound up doing was getting trained by the state to do HIV counseling and testing. The Elizabeth Taylor Foundation had funded us, where we had like a mobile medical unit, so we could not only test at like our offices and satellite offices, but also like go out to locations and do prevention and outreach, like in bars in the French Quarter and like bathhouses. I mean, it was a really, like, I look back on it now and it was like this incredible experience to have as like a 22, 23 year old like gay man.
Yeah.
Because it, well, it taught me a lot, but a lot of what it taught me was like just how to deal with people that are in like unsure and like potentially like traumatic experiences. I believe that I tested over, like while I was working there, I think I tested like close to 1,000 people and gave maybe like 200 what you call preliminary positive results. Mm-hmm. So whenever you, it was a saliva-based test, whenever you test positive for HIV, you, I then like link people into care to get like a Western blot, which means that they, you know, were confirmed either HIV positive or not, and then we would link them into whatever care that they needed, mainly based off of their income. But like, for instance, now whenever I'm in like really stressful meetings, I'm like, well, it's just a budget, it's just, you know, whatever. It's really not this like life or death thing. So it's really taught me to be like super calm in situations.
Yeah.
But that job, so this is like a really roundabout way of answering your question. So that job had very non-traditional hours. I mean, sometimes I wouldn't go into work until 2 p.m. because I would be working, doing like counseling and testing in bars in the French Quarter until like midnight.
Oh, wow. And so, you would like go into bars and stuff?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. We would, there would normally be three people. Two people would be like the counselor and tester, and then another person would do like disco laps, where you would go around and just talk to people in the bar and say, like, the service is here. If you'd like it, you know, we're going to be here from X amount of time to X amount of time, you know, come and find us. And I don't even know how it happened, but I wound up becoming friends with the, at the time, the director of marketing and communications for the New Orleans Museum of Art, who was this wonderful woman, only a few years older than me, named Grace Wilson. And I said, like, let me come intern for you.
Yeah.
I still think that I want to work in art in museums. That's really where my passion lays. Like a lot of people in at the No AIDS Task Force were, you know, I could tell like a year or two into it, I needed to decide, like, do I go to grad school and get like a master's in public health if I want to sort of move up in this profession? Like I knew that I needed to start making a decision about what it is that I wanted to do. So I wound up working for Grace at the New Orleans Museum of Art in a like intern capacity in the marketing and communications department, which I'm sure is much more stringent now. But at that time, I mean, it was just like they could take all the help that they could get.
Yeah.
They were really trying to grow their contemporary art program with a really amazing curator named Miranda Lash. And I just was able to get my hands like in everything and just like was meeting all these really amazing people who I was so impressed with their work ethic. It was, you know, they, none of them were at the place that they wanted to be, but they had this like drive and desire to get there. And to get there meant doing a lot of things and not necessarily getting like monetary compensation for it, but gaining experience. So after doing that for about a year and a half, I did wind up getting paid for my work there. I started looking at different graduate programs. It was like really unclear to me whether I wanted to do like an art history program or an arts administration program. And so I was like talking with a lot of people and then realized like art history was like not the path that I wanted to, like straight art history was not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I actually wound up having a like business trip out to San Francisco through No AIDS. I skipped out on a part of the conference and I went and toured the San Francisco Art Institute and I was like, I don't understand art school or anything about this, but this program sounds incredible.
Yeah.
And so I applied for it, and I applied to a few other places. I think I did like the University of Oregon, like School of Art and Architecture, which I think is more arts administrative based.
Yeah.
And like Boston University and George Washington, and like wound up getting into all of these places, but like SFAI and sort of the lure of San Francisco was like, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
So it felt like I was just sort of like barreling through life at that point. It was like, I'm really either going to commit to like public health, or I'm going to see like where I want to go with art. And
yeah.
I knew that like, I was just, I really, for all the good that, you know, I felt like I was doing, and for all that I was learning with like counseling and testing patients, I just knew that that's not really where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that I wanted to do something in nonprofit, and I think to know that, you know, you have to know that you're going to give a lot of yourself and not get a whole lot of compensation.
Right. You're not going to be like some big ad person or something.
Yeah,
that makes
of course.
Like,
yeah. I like knew that that was like definitely not for me. I was like, something was just like telling me like this other path is like what I wanted to do. I was just like so excited to go to the New Orleans Museum of Art for like anything from like boring staff meetings to like really fun openings, and just they were building out their like audience engagement and public programming. At that point, they had finally recovered enough from Katrina to, you know, sort of like have the staff. There was a new executive director who had come in, and it was super exciting. But I had applied for a few jobs there, and, you know, I didn't get them.
Right.
And it was the story of, you know, we really like you, we really think that you're doing a great job, but you just don't have the experience
yet.
And I, you know, instead of getting frustrated, I was like, well, I think that moving to a new place, and I think putting myself in a situation that I don't really understand, like SFAI or like grad school, was going to be the right move. So I just sort of like, signed the papers, jumped off the cliff, and got on a plane and like moved out here.
I feel you, man. I mean, I when I graduated from undergrad, I worked as an EA in the parent relations office at the University of San Diego, which was my undergrad. And basically, it was development. It was like tapping into the parents that were well off enough to donate money to the school, and then working with parents who had issues with their kids, and you know. And then it's funny, like, it's not what I wanted to do, but I got caught up in it,
mm-hmm.
and I bought into like how important like this side of the university was.
Yeah, of course.
And then I remember just reaching a point where like, well, actually, you know, I originally studied art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I want to go the university administration route, or do I want to go the museum route?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was similar. Like, fuck it. This is what if I got to do this, is what I got to do, and I have to do it now.
Right, right. That's,
yeah,
like definitely the way that I felt. I felt that I was not really going to get sort of anywhere that I really wanted to in the field that I wanted to in New Orleans. And as much as I really loved the city, I just felt like I really wanted to try something else. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's like total first world problems, right? It's like I decided that I wanted to go from one amazing city to another, you know, I mean,
right.
It's like, you have to recognize that in everything that I'm saying, but that is definitely the sort of like impetus for like moving out here and just trying to figure it all out here.
So now you're at SFAI. At this point, what is now your new focus? Like, you know, because obviously, like, you're working on your thesis. You know, you have to start,
mm-hmm.
coming up with that idea. So then, what is at this point you're thinking you want to be at a museum institution?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely felt pretty lost like the first year, because I was like, oh, I'm not really like on this long-term academic track.
Right.
I knew that pretty much from the beginning, like,
yeah,
from the first, like, you know, from the first semester, I was like, these are amazing people, and you know, maybe I don't know how to talk about like neoliberalism and capitalism in the most like eloquent way.
Right.
I'm going to sort of sit back, shut up and read and, you know, sort of try to learn from people who I, you know, sort of gleaned pretty immediately had thought about maybe their track a little bit more than I had. So I started like doing some research into like thesis topics, but the sort of like institutional critique writing that I was reading, and a lot of the professors at SFAI are like people who work in museums here. I was just sort of more fascinated with sort of like the inner workings of a museum and was really sort of missing working.
Yeah.
That's really what threw me for a loop in grad school.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm, you know, I miss going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I started at SFAI, I had the same feeling too. I felt confused. I think the moment I heard Foucault and how it was referenced and the fact that I never even heard of this guy until I went to grad school, I was like, where the fuck am I?
Yeah.
And I was the same way. I think I was more of like, I didn't want to be a professor. I didn't want to be an academic, but at first I missed going back to school. I loved it for a brief second.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, you know, I was like, I'm ready to like go to 9 to 5 and like get to work and like do something that like.
Yeah. You know, and because I'm not an artist. I don't have a practice. I always loved what sort of like got me like out of bed in the morning was like being able to like facilitate artists who I like admired so much, even if I didn't know their work, even if I didn't understand their work, but like this sort of thing that artists have, which I admittedly don't have, I like want to help them sort of reach their goals. And I think that I've learned that I want to help them reach their goals in terms of like exhibiting their work in an institution for like public, for the public.
Yeah.
And that's like very pragmatic things about like, you know, balancing a budget and figuring out like fabrication needs. And then also like being able to see like a finished product, a finished idea, especially in like, you know, in contemporary artwork where a lot of the work really responds to the space that it's being exhibited. I mean, that's something that, you know, really excites me. I'm sure that a lot of people that would be listening to this are like totally rolling their eyes or like, oh, this guy, you know, I'm not an artist. But, you know, I certainly never claim to be one.
Yeah.
But I think that in grad school, the most amazing thing was like meeting people who really were on that track.
Yeah.
Who were these like really intelligent, dedicated artists and scholars, and from all over the world. So the way that sort of like moving to New Orleans from Alabama like opened sort of my life up in a new way. Definitely the community that SFAI has in here and sort of like in the broader Bay Area region and on the West Coast, like certainly like enriched my life by just like the people that I was able to meet and interact with on a daily basis and the things that I was like learning about that I didn't even know that I wanted to learn about.
Yeah. Well, so talk about the different internships you've had, because I remember you listed them off to me one time. You worked for, you know, you've done stuff for the Arts Commission, San Francisco Arts Commission.
Mm-hmm.
You did something at Berkeley, and then you also, and then of course you interned here, which is where I met you, where you were doing your internship at the YMCA.
Well, I had, so I guess it was like my second semester of grad school. The previous director of visual arts here, a woman named Betty Sue Hertz, was a professor of mine, and I sort of like attacked her in class and was like, do you need an intern? Like, I feel like I need some normalcy here. Like, let me come and like, you know, like work a little bit. And so I started interning here with a curatorial assistant. And then, you know, I was like writing my thesis. And then over the summer between the, between first and second year, I wound up getting a job as like an independent contractor with the Arts Commission, where I worked with their director of marketing, where I was like redesigning all the plaques and all the language and building a mobile website for all the work, all the public art commission work in Terminal 2 at SFO.
How did you get that gig?
I think I saw it on Facebook. I'm not even kidding. Like, I think it was just like, I think I followed the Arts Commission on Facebook and they were like, something, 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 like a 12-week thing. And so I like immediately applied for it because I was doing it while I had the internship here. So yeah. I was like really getting into like being a pretty, you know, regular presence at YBCA while also doing that. And that ended. And then while I was writing my thesis my second year, I'm pretty sure it was on Facebook. I saw that the Arts Research Center at UC Berkeley, the program manager was going on maternity leave, like a 6-month maternity leave. And I wound up like writing a cover letter, which like, you know, you have to submit through like the university system.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I was just like, oh, I'll never see this again.
Right.
And wound up getting an interview with Shannon Jackson and Julia Bryan Wilson and a few other people and wound up getting that job. So my last year of grad school was like writing a thesis, doing class, interning here, and then like commuting. It was like 2 or 3 days a week at like, it was like 8 a.m. to like 1 p.m. Working for UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
You know, part of why I wanted to work was that I didn't want to take out more student loans. You know,
yeah,
it was a super like pragmatic thing. I just wanted to have money, you know, that I was spending that wasn't this like borrowed money.
Sure.
And that was like the craziest, busiest year of my life, and I hope that I never have to do anything like that again.
And I met you when you were in the midst of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you know, you're 1 year ahead of me in the same program, the Exhibition and Museum Studies program,
mm-hmm.
and your counterpart at the other intern that you entered with, which was I forgot her last name.
Oh, Stephanie Tran. Yeah.
Yeah. And I met her at school, and she was like, "Hey, I'm leaving my internship. Do you need an internship?" And I was like, "Yes, I do."
Yeah.
And you know, and I think it was second semester of my first year, I got that job, and then I met you,
mm-hmm.
and I remember meeting you, and then you were like always on the run because you were like either catching the BART to go to Berkeley or you were doing
totally.
Yeah. And I remember just asking, I think there was like one day I had you long enough where I said, where are you going? And then you like told me that this gig at Berkeley and that you had to take the bus over there and then maybe like walk up the street from like the
BART. Totally.
Yeah.
And then like take the BART back and then like get yeah. on the Muni to go down to the dog patch to catch like a 7 p.m. class.
Right.
I mean, like, I was, like, not sleeping. I was not eating. I was the skinniest I've ever been in my life. And it was this, like, but it really went back to, like, these few people that I met in New Orleans that I was talking about who were just, like, if you want something that is not this, like, sort of, like, corporate agenda, like,
yeah.
hustle for it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't, like, complain about it. Like, I remember, like, talking to a friend and sort of bitching about it. He was like, you can bitch about it if you're tired, but he was like, no one's forcing you to do any of this.
That's
you
true.
Know, like, and I was like, cool, you're right. And I knew that like the gig with Berkeley was gonna end because the woman was gonna come back after her maternity leave. And I just happened to be at the right place at the right time at YBCA to like score a job.
Yeah.
I had been like heavily interning under the curatorial assistant at the time, who this was like April of my last semester of grad school.
Yeah.
Wind up getting a job and leaving, maybe with only like a week and a half, 2 weeks notice. And Betty Sue Hertz was like, do you want the position as an interim while I
yeah.
find someone new?
Yeah.
And I was like, yes. I do. I would love to get paid here. You know,
yeah.
I'd love to get paid for all the work that I'm doing here. And
yeah.
so I wound up having that for a little while. And like, I think I probably applied like for like the real thing, but like the woman before had like vast, deep editorial experience that I like did not possess at all. And well, that's something that
she leave for like an editorial job.
She did. Yeah. She left as like a managing editor for like some business. I can't remember what it is. But like, you know, there was no way that I could compete with that. And the curatorial assistant, who's the curatorial associate now, Susie Cantor, wound up coming from The Asian, and taking over that position. And, you know, again, it was like meeting her and seeing everything that she was capable of was like, oh, that's a really good check on life, because I'm clearly not, you know, I'm clearly not qualified for that.
Sure. You know, I think it was my third week that happened where she left, the curatorial assistant left, and it was like 1 minute you were like sitting next to me.
Totally.
And the next day was like, hey, so Louis, I'm the interim curatorial assistant now. So here's what I need you to do. Yeah. And I was like, damn, look at this guy moving up already.
It was a totally awkward thing to do, because you know you're like with like all the other interns, and then to sort of like be plucked out.
Yeah.
To do that, but I think that like that was like, you know, again, like recognizing an opportunity. It was like, you know, I've got to do this for as long as possible, and I have no idea how long I'll be able to do it. I think I did it for like maybe 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
We went through like one opening, which was a show called Dissonant Futures.
Yep.
And I think I like ordered the wrong paper that the brochure was going to go on. You know,
I also remember that.
I was just like, you know, I think doing good work, but then also making like some, you know, some pretty sizable mistakes.
Right.
But Betty Sue like recognized that I wanted to, like, in the case of YBCA, the visual arts department is literally half upstairs and half downstairs. So whenever I say that I wanted to go downstairs, that is not like a demeaning reference.
No.
I wanted to work in the production.
Yeah.
And I saw like what the exhibition manager and the registrars and the preparators were doing, and I was like, that is more in line with what I think that I am capable of doing and where I could like really sort of see myself moving up.
And so then how did that transition happen? Because were you were like a part-timer first, right? Like you transitioned from that to being a part-timer.
Yeah. You know, Betty Sue was like, look, we've hired someone for the other position, but we want to keep you around. Here's like a 3-day-a-week position that didn't really have a title. And at that point, there were like some pretty key like senior positions that weren't filled. So I was just sort of like filling in the gaps like wherever I could go.
Sure.
And Rebecca Silverman, who's the senior registrar, was just like taking on an incredible amount of work at that point. And she is like an incredibly like patient person. And I like moved down into the office that I'm in now that I share with her and another woman named Dorothy. And she like basically taught me how to be a registrar.
Yeah. Yeah. She's awesome. I think I got to a point where I interned here for 2 years, and I think the first year was under Betty Sue as one of her curatorial interns. And I think at one point I just saw what you guys are doing, and mostly because you moved down there, and just like seeing like what's Martin doing now.
Yeah.
And I just found that way more interesting than just I think the curatorial side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I asked Betty Sue like, can I go downstairs?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember you came down and you were in the treehouse, which is the what we call the office that has the senior preparator and the chief preparator in. And like, you know, we were doing like everything from like fabricating works to talking with artists about like what their goals were for like upcoming shows to like entering in data into TMS. Yeah. Those who don't know, it's the museum system. It's like a data collection system.
And Rebecca was awesome because she taught me how to use the TMS. She helped me like basically work more. And I had prior experience doing condition reporting and stuff, but Rebecca would teach me a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a little bit more faster way of doing it too.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I think the best time I had here was working with you guys.
Yeah,
and just seeing what you guys did.
It's really a lot of fun because you get to sort of be like on the front line with artists whenever, you know, once the curator has sort of like made the move to say, you know, we want to show you, or we're doing this like larger group show, and this is where I think that your work would fall in. Like,
yeah.
It's really fun to meet the artist. Most of the time it's over email or Skype or something.
Sure.
And then figure out, like, does the work exist? Does it not exist? Like, how do we make it exist? Where do we get it from in the world to be installed here? How is it supposed to look at everything from, like, you know, like insurance writers to get it on a truck from New York, or to figure out like what sort of like hanging hardware it requires to hang it, like in our gallery, does
right.
it match the aesthetic that the artist is going for? Like
sure.
these little details, like I never knew anything about.
Yeah, I think it's the most important part. I think of the whole of putting together an exhibit that I think people overlook. Like people who come to see it, like off the streets.
Totally, and I think that is something where like you maybe you only notice it if it's done sloppily, you know, if you can sort of see, if you can tell that something's wrong, then maybe that's the only time that you would ever like, for many people, that might be the only time that they sort of like notice like exhibition design, or like methods of install, or like how you're supposed to like move around a like pedestal with a work or something.
Yeah.
And I think that like really speaks volumes to the prep crew here, who have like such, I don't know, just like this like sea of vast knowledge on like how to build things, how to make things, how to handle work, how to like interact with it. That I just feel like I like continually like learn from people today, because they a lot of the preparators are also like incredible working artists right now. So they take a lot of pride in making sure that like their fellow artists' works is like presented.
Sure.
Well.
What do you think you've been able to apply over the multiple different types of jobs you've had, you know, in your lifetime up to now, that you've been able to apply to your job now at the YBCA?
Well, I think that's a really tough question. I think I just have like learned how to be like really patient with like whatever sort of process that I'm trying to work in. Whether that is like dealing with a like unsavory personality or a really complicated but beautiful sort of installation plan, and you have to figure out like how we're going to make it work in the institution here and how we're going to like find the money, you know, to sort of like shuffle around to make that happen. And a lot of the time it's like just following through with things and, you know, staying late and being completely exhausted by the time that the show opens. But to know that, like, well, you know, one, really, that, you know, you're representing the institution that you work for and that you are, you know, doing the best that you can, like, for these artists who have put in all of this, you know, time and effort and thought into their work to make sure that it is presented in the correct way, and to make sure that like the public has like hopefully an enjoyable experience, or at least like a really like critically engaged experience
sure.
with the work. It's not, I don't think it's about like a wow factor, you know, but if people are going to be like really critically engaged with work, I want them to have like a really wonderful space to do it in.
Yeah. Now that you're on this exhibit's career path, what is your ultimate goal? Like, what do you see yourself like being eventually?
Oh, I have no idea. I think that, you know, I really don't know. I mean, I know that it's not like a curatorial path.
Right.
I try I know that like maybe my ideas like in like sort of like the curatorial vein like are not where they like should be for institutions or maybe even like for artists, but I certainly like hope to continue to grow in like this exhibitions role. I mean, I don't know if that means at like a larger institution or you know, maybe being able to grow enough here to have some sort of like, you know, director role at a smaller organization like way on down the line.
Yeah.
But I think I always thought about working in a museum, and to me like a museum meant like having a collection.
Sure.
And that's been like a really like welcome like role reversal working here and sort of thinking about like yearly budgets and like membership and you know, the ways that you work with like the development department to sort of like build programs here that aren't based off of, you know, setting aside money for like pleasing board members or to adding to like a canon of a collection. It's been like this really incredible freeing experience to like, you know, take whatever is there in like a fiscal year and present the work, whether or not the work is already made or like, most of the time, what I have found like really rewarding is like working with people to like create work for the space. I have no idea what I want to do.
Sure.
I feel like that's like my like main thing in life.
You're just going
like,
with the flow, man. Going with the flow.
Yeah.
You're going with what you like, what's in front of you. That's all that matters. So then, you know, I mean, it's interesting too. Like you mentioned the idea of whether or not you want to go to bigger institution or a smaller institution, because I think that's something I think that a lot of people don't understand either, is that you get there's two different types of experiences, right? Mm-hmm. At an art institution, like there's places like the YBCA where it's not a collection, like collecting type museum. It's more embedded in the community and more about providing like a place to show arts and interact with the community with the arts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something have to think about, right?
Yeah, I think that sort of as you or as one sort of like finds their way in sort of like the institutional path, you think to yourself like, I mean, to me, like right now, I mean, I sort of like joke around with friends a lot that like I'm like one of the few people like in a friend group who's like actually like just very satisfied and happy with their job.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with like the size of an organization like YBCA. It's certainly not, you know, it's not this small little place. I mean, it's a major player for sure.
Yeah.
But it's not this like behemoth like the Asian Art Museum or SF MoMA or the De Young, where, you know, quite honestly, like, even though I feel like I've learned a lot and can bring a lot to the table, I don't know what I would be qualified for in like these other institutions. And I feel like I get to sort of have this sort of like freedom and this really interesting relationship with curators here where, you know, I'm never making a final curatorial decision, but I am certainly like influential in like understanding what everyone's like end goal is.
Sure.
And my voice is certainly heard.
Yeah.
In a way that I'm not sure that it would be in other places. So like while I'm certainly not like thinking, oh, I want to like get a new job anytime soon.
Right.
I think that whenever that time comes, it will be like navigating like what kind of place do I want to go to.
Sure. Well, you know what, man? Thanks for coming on. It was great catching up with you.
Yeah, this is great. Sorry I talk so much.
No, this is great. I mean, that's the point.
I just totally stole the mic my first time on a podcast. Just ridiculous.
No, no. The more you talk, the better it is. They want to hear you, not me.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to do it. This is a really fun, like, full circle for both of us.
I know, right? Yeah, and you know what? And before we go, if you want to plug, what's the upcoming shows that we look forward to seeing over here at the YBCA?
Yeah, so on Friday, June 16th, we open in our downstairs galleries, Tommy Bergara, Talking to Power. 2 weeks later, on Friday, the 30th, I believe, we will open up a part of the City Initiative series that I was talking about earlier by an urban designer named Damon Rich and Jay Shin called Space Brains Yerba Buena 3000.
Nice.
So
cool.
Check it out.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing you guys this summer, hopefully.
All right. Well, thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's it for today. Thanks everyone for listening, and thanks again to Martin for coming on. The latest show at the YBCA opens on June 30th, and it's titled Space Brains Yerba Buena 3000, which features two projects by Damon Rich and Jay Shin. To learn more about it, visit ybca.org. Also, if you liked listening to this week's episode, let me know by leaving a comment on iTunes. It helps the podcast get more exposure. And lastly, you can listen to past episodes on the website at artscenepc.com, and you can follow the podcast on Instagram or Twitter at artscenepc. All right, till next time, everyone.